Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of Call and Response Podcast. So, y'all, tomorrow is Black History Month, and I am ready to get the party started early by dropping the third Broadway Con live show. It's a three-peat, y'all. Both of the Broadway Con live shows so far have made me feel so full after, and this year was no exception. It was a beautiful hour where our guests were honest and vulnerable about their experiences and stories and their questions as Black artists in the industry. And I am just, I'm just so grateful for all of them for sharing their spirits like that with us at the panel. And thank you to everyone who attended the panel. It was so great to see some familiar faces and to meet new ones. One listener even came up to me at the end and said he listens to the podcast every week to just ground him. And it made me tear up a little bit, y'all. It really means so much that not only has this become a safe space for artists to share their stories, but for you guys to take in what you need. It's really special. And that's why I really love BroadwayCon. I've been to all five, and I love the community vibe of it. People coming together to celebrate what they love and to celebrate each other really warms my heart. Because as much as I love the online world, it's great to make offline connections as well. And if you're looking for more exciting opportunities to be present with your friends IRL, you know Gold Star is the place to go. With so many events and activities that are really spanning a range of interests. And as we always say, they have affordable tickets for theater, concerts, comedy shows, and so much more. So download Gold Star and go make some memories, y'all, but after you listen to this podcast episode. Because without further ado, here is Con Response's 3-peat live show at Broadway Con. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Con Response's third live show at Broadway Con. Yes, we've been calling it a three-peat. I'm Felicia Fitzpatrick, and I will take that applause. Thank you. And thank y'all so much for being here today. I love this day because, as y'all know, call and response interviews are usually one-on-one, but so I love getting to talk to a group. And look at these beautiful people right here. I'm, like, tripping out right now. And as y'all know, that we record these, and it'll be released as an episode, so the energy and love you give will be added onto that, and we need to definitely, like, eat the mic so people will hear what we're saying. But without further ado, let me introduce our guests, because I'm so hyped, and I'm so thrilled, and I'm so excited to introduce today's guests. Next to me, we have Taylor Amon Jones. Hey, girl, hey. You probably saw her as Mopsa in Head Over Heels, Scotland, PA at Roundabout, and my personal favorite, she was Sally Simpson in The Who's Tommy at Kennedy Center back, was that this spring? A blur, yeah. It was amazing. And then next to her, we have Jelani Remy. Hello. Currently in Ain't Too Proud, but y'all saw him as Simba in The Lion King, I'm sure. We were going to try to get like a rope for you to swing in on, like you do at end of Act One?
Yeah, but preset.
Yeah, preset. And then next to him, we actually have a podcast alum from season one, Janelle McDermott, y'all. She's been involved with Range Acapella, was in A Bronx Tale on Broadway, and is about to star in We're Gonna Die at Second Stage off Broadway. And if you walk down 8th Avenue on with us 43rd, you can see her face on a beautiful big-ass poster. Yes, I have photos. We can all look later. And then next to her is Destiny Ray. Yes, a season two podcast alum. She was in Amelie, Book of Mormon, and is currently in Tina. And very important for the people in this room, you'll love this, the co-founder of Bold, which I definitely want you to chat about a little bit later. Empowering Black women in the performing arts, which we love. Yes? And then on the end is Aisha Jackson, y'all, a surprise guest. Currently the standby Anna in Frozen, but was in Beautiful and Waitress, and is just a star on the rise. So hi y'all.
Hey everybody.
quickly to just get us started. A couple sentences on how you got involved in performing arts.
Oh, sure. My friend at school invited me to do the local community theater youth play when I was 10, Bugsy Malone Jr. And I've never stopped, literally. That's pretty much it, yeah.
I started performing in high school. I was a late bloomer. My choir teacher, Jen Foos, props. She pushed me to do my first musical where I got cast as Duty in Greece. Wow. Hold your applause. But it was working on that song, Those Magic Changes, and I sang it in front of people and they clapped. And I was like, oh, I must have this all the time. And that was sort of how I got bit by the bug.
Hi,
everybody. I think I got started in performing arts through church growing up. We did a lot of choir singing, but also, there was plays. Every June and December, there were like, it was a Christmas show or something like that. And it had auditions, it was very serious. And then, you know, if you're a good reader as a child, obviously theater is something people push you toward. So I started in that way, and then I got really into a cappella music. And I think the push toward theater professionally was also a teacher. My high school choir teacher was like, you can probably do this for real. And I was like, okay. So then we started.
We got our own mics. Shout out to BroadwayCon. I'm from Texas. I went to the Boys and Girls Club growing up. And we had a local, shout out to Boys and Girls Club. We had a local ballet school come in and do free classes. And my Boys and Girls Club was blackety black, like very black. But this white lady would come in and teach us. And she taught us right because she showed us Alvin Ailey and Judith Jamison and Carmen de Lavallade. And I saw women who looked like me doing what she was teaching us. And I got the bug. I went to Broadway Theater Project and learned that I could major in it. But I would say the moment that I was like, this is what I want to do, I did a production of The Colored Museum by George C. Wolfe in college. And we directed ourselves, essentially. And I fell in love with black art and realized that there was a place for me.
My whole family sings. My dad is a pastor, so we like all grew up singing in church. But when I was in like the sixth grade, my brother came home. He went to a performing arts high school, and he was like, yo, we're doing Once on This Island, and they need a little T-Moon. And I was like, okay.
Yes, T-Moon.
So he like practiced with me and taught me everything, and I went in, and I got it. And then I got in the room, and I saw Big T-Moon, and I was like, hold on, I want to do that. And so that's kind of where the passion was birthed, but it really came full circle when I was in high school understudying Jacquina Calicango. In Aida, and I got to go on one, you know, it's only four shows in high school, so I got to go on for like one of them, and I was just standing there, and I was singing, and I like just had this moment of like feeling at peace and at home, and just feeling joy for using my gifts in this way, and I was like, I think I want to do this. So yeah, then I went to college for it and came here.
I love that. Y'all are amazing. I'm just obsessed with y'all. So then we said Judith Jamison from Alvin Ailey. What were some of your artistic influences and inspirations as y'all were getting to performing arts? And then maybe separately or the same, what was the first time you felt represented in musical theater?
Heather Headley.
Shout out to Heather Headley.
Heather Headley, queen. I think, yeah, that was a big inspiration of mine. And feeling represented, I actually answered this question a few weeks ago, and I realized I've always kind of felt represented because I grew up in a community that was majority African American. And so like, and I went to performing arts high school and we did shows for us. And then we also like created our own shows. So I always felt this sense of seeing myself represented. I grew up watching freaking Amber Iman sing and my brothers and my like, so like I always felt like I saw myself represented around me and in my community. So I'm very grateful for that. And I think that is why when I come to New York and I don't always see myself everywhere, I'm like ignited. I'm like, hold on, this is not right, you know? So just to have equal representation. But yeah, I feel like I always saw myself somewhere.
I grew up in a predominantly white town, but like I said, I had mentors that were like, this isn't what you see, but it's out there, you know? And so I grew up going to Dallas Black Dance, and I remember my dance teacher playing Hairspray and hearing Lil Inez for the first time and being like, oh, and there are young black women who are doing this. But definitely, I mean, you've got your Audra McDonalds and your Heather Headleys and just incredible women that are doing it. Debbie Allen, you know, who has done it all, you know. Yeah. And she's from Texas, so I mean. But yeah, so I think I had to force that into my DNA, but it existed.
It's great that you had mentors that were able to help you guide you to that way. You know, it's so important. So shout out to teachers and mentors. Yeah.
I'd say the first time I really felt represented, especially in musical theater, was the first Broadway show I saw, which was actually Spring Awakening. And I know the Spring Awakening is a majority white cast, and there were some Latin folks in there as well, but Lily Cooper was in Spring Awakening in the original cast.
Shout out to Lily Cooper.
And shout out to Lily Cooper for holding it down, because in high school, I was like, I kind of have this rock voice. I'm not the R&B that people might think. And I had ideas in my head of what people had told me. And then I was also in these predominantly white school spaces, so the music I was listening to and the things I was singing didn't necessarily sound like the production of Dreamgirls people might anticipate. So I was like, what is there for me? And a member of my high school drama club was in Spring Awakening, so I went with my school. And so I can still see the picture in my mind of when the drama club went. And I remember seeing Lily Cooper, and I was like, that's a black girl. That's a black girl who's my age. That's a black girl who's my age in this really cool musical that I'm obsessed with. That's a black girl who's my age in this really cool musical that I'm obsessed with. And she's an alto. Wow. Like, so I definitely think that was a huge moment for me.
I could, well, being of the male persuasion, my parent, okay, you guys got me thinking, because I grew up in a very, my parents moved to Cedar Grove, New Jersey, shout out to Cedar Grove, New Jersey, which was I graduated with one other black person. Wow. However, my parents instilled in me that I'm not less than, you are, if not better, and you need to be yourself, and that sort of drilled in my head, and my teacher, you got to understand, I did a production of The Wiz, being the only black person in it. But I had that teacher, but I didn't feel different. I didn't feel, and I applauded her for doing that, because she did it for me, essentially. I was a big fish in a small pond, I think. And like we did, Pippin. I was a leading player, so she found things for me. But if I'm thinking back of college, Montclair State, it was a lot. It was kind of, it was also, you know, predominantly white, and I think it was really my eyes open to being with a large number of black people when I got cast in The Lion King. And I think that that's what I got my sense of community and family, and understood that, wow, I was in a different bubble and now I'm in this bubble, and it's very different, and it is opening my eyes to things that I didn't even think about, or injustices or struggles that I never even, I was blind to, I think. And I think that every step of the way has given me strength and information and a sense of community and empowerment and awareness. Because now I see I think the struggles are, or what I can do to help a situation, or how I can help educate others in a situation. And it's because of being equipped, being smart, but also now having my eyes opened. Does that answer the question? What was the question?
No, that was good. I love what you said. It was great.
Okay.
Yeah, it was artistic influences, I think, is where we started,
artistic,
right? But like, I like where we ended up. Huh? And represented.
I fell in love with Ben Vereen.
Yeah.
I fell in love with Ben Vereen. I fell in love with Eddie Murphy. I fell in love with these comedians. I fell in love with David Alan Greer. Seeing him, I used to watch Mad TV all the time. We used to watch SNL all the time. I used to like radio record the VMAs and redo all the performances of Boys to Men I was that kid for sure. I was definitely into sketch comedy. I was definitely into Motown music. I was definitely just loving to recreate things. And I love Ben Vereen and like Zubily Zoo and all that sort of stuff. I just loved how he sort of broke the fourth wall all the time and like was talking to you and like slapping you in the face with his energy.
So I'm from California, NorCal, and I'm from a very small town named Fairfield. It's directly between Sacramento and San Francisco. There also happens to be an Air Force base in that town. So, and I think even if you Google it, like, Vallejo, like the sister city, like right next to it, we're like the fifth most diversity in the country, and it's like so tiny. So I've always grown up with a lot of representation from everywhere, because everyone is there. Also, like every single member of my family is a different skin shade. So I remember it took me a long time to realize, like, oh, I'm the only black kid in my class, and I was from kindergarten to fourth grade. But then I moved schools and everybody was everywhere, which also was reflected in the youth theater that I grew up in. So there was always So, like, if the youth theater I did, they always double cast every show, and there's, like, 60 kids, so everybody has to get a part. So families are, you know, like, I did Fiddler, and I was Hoddle, but my dad was Filipino, and my mom was white, and my sister was Mexican, you know, and that was every single play. And, you know, it's kids' theater, so if you can sing, you're going to get a role. And lucky for me, I could carry a tune, so... When I was 13, I was Belle. When I was 14, I was Sandy. When like, and like, but like, so for me,
always have a job.
Always, right? And my Danny was my best friend, like a big Filipino dude. Like, so it was it really was until I was kind of an adult, and really more like when I got to New York, that you know, when you get into a room and you realize, oh, they're. We all look the same, and they're clearly looking for something, or just like, why didn't you call more people in, or why am I having to ask to be seen for that thing? Because back home, they just call everybody. And so, but anyway, that's what I would say for like my journey, but also felt represented. I don't think I always loved musicals. My mom would take me to the tours, but I didn't think I was going to do that. My inspirations were more like, I thought I was going to be like the next Alicia Keys, yeah. And I would get my hair braided like her, or like That's So Raven on Disney Channel, or Sister Sister, yeah, or Moesha. So I think that's where I saw myself represented, and then like segue into like, those were also like very musical shows anyway, or like, you know, the Huxtables and like that type of stuff, yeah.
Also, I feel like our generation was so influenced by the Brandy Cinderella, because like you were talking about the California and everyone being different. It was like, right? Like that. First of all, that movie just is so good. But also, it was like Whoopi Goldberg and Paolo being her son, and like no one questioned it. Like it just was Bernadette Peters and Brandy. Like, well, I mean, it's just stepmom, but like it worked. Like that family worked, you know.
Bernadette's black. I'm here to tell y'all. Bernadette is black.
But also, Paolo Montalban.
Yeah, shout out to Paolo.
What time.
Yeah. But so with this in mind, and Jelani, you kind of touched on it with The Lion King too, like, you can have experience, well, I want to know about your experiences where it wasn't all black cast, or like with Tina and now Ain't Too Proud, versus these rehearsal rooms where I think of like A Bronx Tale, although y'all had a black woman stage manager, right?
We did.
But what is it
Beverly
like
Beverly Jenkins.
Yes,
black woman
shout
PSM,
out to her.
A queen.
Because there's not many black people on, you know, the creative teams. We talk about the stage diversity and bodies on the stage, but Aisha is such an advocate for having diversity, like we've talked about it a lot. But having diversity on the crews, the stage managers, the company managers. So I want to know what it's like working with, like, Dominique Mariso and Katori Hall and all of those things.
Working with Dominique is like Oprah's disciple. She's just so full of knowledge and power and strength, and what she has to offer you as an artist versus what she's bringing as her own artist is just, it's tremendous. And anytime I get a chance to just soak up some of her information and soak up some of her history and what she's been through and what she's still going through and what she's presented, it's literally like a masterclass. Yeah. And backstage at our show, there's a lot of diversity backstage, which is so fun. And this show, now that I'm in, is another family, and it's really, really, really wonderful. And it's everybody's so close, and like people look you in the eye, and people see you, and they ask how you are and follow through. And even like these two people that are here, they've seen the show like how many times? Nine times. But like they're in like Flynn, and like, but we welcome people in, and it's a close knit. And honestly, everybody is from a different walk of life, and we each learn from each other's paths.
Aisha, will you tell? I love the wig story about Frozen. Do you mind sharing that? I just love that story.
No, yeah, I think it's amazing to have those experiences where you see so many people everywhere, but that's not the experience in every theater. And so I would love for that to be the experience in every theater, where you walk backstage and you have wardrobe supervisors and hair and wig supervisors and management and your creative team, and like, and it's not just like one check, you know, one box checked for. Oh, we have. This person is a person of color, but everybody else on the team is not. Or even in with like principals, you have six or seven principals, and one or two of them are people of color, and they're like, "We've done it," and it's like, "No, you haven't." And so, you know, of course, we take progress. Thank you for that. But also, we deserve to take up space. And so, I think that's what's most important when you have a cast that you look around and you see yourself everywhere, or for Frozen, our production stage manager was Lisa Don Cave. And seeing that beautiful black woman lead this room with such grace and love and power, I see her and I'm like, I'm inspired. And that's not even my line of work, but to see this black woman taking up space and like having success in this industry is beautiful, and it inspires anyone, no matter what your department is or whatever. But yes, for Frozen, so we all know Anna is a redheaded white woman in the cartoon. And for the show, being the standby, I was given the opportunity to choose what color hair I desired for my wigs. And so I sat down with David Brian Brown, and he was like, you know, Disney has given me the go-ahead to, like, this is your choice. Like, if you want, we can do brown, and we can have, like, red highlights. I know beautiful black women with red hair. That is, you know, that is a thing. And so I loved that they sat down with me and was like, what do you want? And so we sat there and we went through different, I was like, oh, this one's too red, like maybe do this more brown. And he's like, no, this is, so we went back and forth. And then I looked in the mirror and I was like, okay, let's just do brown. You know, like, let's just make it me. And I think that's important, because when we do create these characters, they're not us, but we get to take in parts of us. And so in that moment, it was cool for me to be able to say, like, I don't have red hair. Like, can I just have brown hair? And it's still like her, I still have the little streak, the little gray white streak. I'm still following the path of the story, but I'm being completely myself. And I think it's important also that when a young little chocolate drop comes to see herself, she sees herself fully represented, hair, head to toe, hair and everything, you know? So yeah,
Well, I just love that story, and I love that you were able to have your voice heard in that moment, because I think it was actually the first live show we did for Con Response at Broadway Con. We were bringing up how there's never been a black Linda. At the time, there'd never been a black Linda. Yeah. And someone was like, well, what about the hair color? And I remember Danae Benton was like, Beyonce's blonde.
Look, there are also many, like, not, blonde,
yeah,
black,
it's not
women.
That deep. It's not that deep.
No.
And then Brittany Johnson went on. It was perfect, and it was amazing.
Props to Brittany.
Yeah, shout out to Brittany. Props to Brittany. She's amazing. But I think it can be intimidating to try to speak up for yourself in that way when you're not in power. And I'm curious, especially for the women, you know, the angry black woman trope that exists, if there's times or stories you could share from, like, the rehearsal room of when you were like, okay, I feel like I can't fully speak up because I'm going to be seen as angry or whatever.
Yeah. Oh,
no, please. No, please.
Interestingly enough, Tina is was produced in London, they went to Germany, and they came to America. And so when they came to America, they were like, there are just things that are not going to fly here in America, because there will be people in the audience who have actually gone to a church down south and know that that ain't what it sounds like. So our creative team, the heads are white. Our associates are predominantly black, actually. But what I will say is when you are in that position, it is, I've been in shows where your white director or choreographer does not create space. They instead just want to implant what they think this experience is like on you. And we were very, very blessed to have someone like Phyllida say, okay, let's create this together. Mm-hmm. And it was scary at first, especially when you've been in settings where you are shut down, where your experience doesn't matter to them, and they have a picture and an image they want to create, and you have to force your way into it. We workshopped that church scene for weeks, to the point where some of us were like, okay, when are we going to find it?
Who in the room has seen Tina, by the way? Yes? Okay. So we all know the church scene. Yes, okay.
Both the church scene and the scene where Tina finds her voice in the club. We workshopped those things, and we're like, there was literally a moment where, like, I just started singing, does anybody know this hymn? And we just all started singing, hallelujah. And we all, like, it was an incredible experience to have 20 cooks in the kitchen and for our director to be okay with that and say, actually, all of your voices matter in this moment. And I watched us all have to train ourselves to allow it to matter. Because not only is it a problem as actors and creatives that our voices sometimes are shrunk, but as black folk, our voices sometimes don't matter in this world. We've been taught that they don't. So for both of those, the intersectionality of that to come alive in this room and to say, okay, she is listening to us and wants to hear us and wants to implement the changes that we made. it was transformational. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely have had some experiences on both sides of the spectrum. A lot of my early professional career, and I guess my Broadway debut in A Bronx Tale, I've been in period pieces that are about racism in 1967 or 68. So I've done a lot of multi-ethnic casts that are usually black and white, or conversations where we're dealing with difficult things. Racism, war, sex, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Hair was the first professional tour I ever did. boop. And so I am very grateful for a lot of those experiences because my perspective on what it's like to work in this industry has been colored by lots of different experiences of people. At the same time, you always have to question whose story is this and who is this for? Because beyond those shows, I mean, there are tons of workshops and readings, and we've all done some projects that we really love and some other projects that were like, when is this day over? Is it 29 hours? The reading's finished. But I will say that I've had those experiences where I am mindful of how I use my power in a space. Because you can step into space and command attention. And for some people, especially if a director has a certain ego, that's scary.
Yep.
They want to make sure that they have certain actors or creatives or people in the room on their side so that if they want to get away with something or have a different kind of attitude, that no one's going to call them on it. But then I realized that I don't serve anyone by playing small. And so I've had experiences where I'm going to say, that doesn't really work for me. Or, we were under the impression that this was a concert. Why are we doing choreography now? Or,
that's... But that's important. It's an important way to know how to say it without being unprofessional, but also just being, like, real and genuine and just coming to that person and being like, hey, I got a question. But not, like, being
so what you not
disrespectful. Yeah. yeah. Not, it's a fine line between that
There's
and being
fine,
disrespectful. Yeah. And they listen to you if you right. come to them honestly. And I'm not saying try to be something that you're not.
Of course.
I'm just saying you have to wrap it in such a way in the professional setting to be heard. There are ways to say things.
And the frustration is that in the professional setting, in this exact mm-hmm. example where why are we doing choreography, that we all have been in rooms where our white, especially male counterparts go, wait, why are we doing choreography? Just like that. And they'll get it, and it doesn't matter. And someone will give them a nice answer. But if any of us go, wait, why are we doing choreography? Then it's like, oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like the whole room gets silent.
She's
it's a whole
experience.
You know,
yeah.
it's like, no, we literally just ask the same thing. And that's where the, so yeah. we have all had to learn, yes. and everyone should, but especially everyone on this table has had to extra learn to go, hi, excuse me, I just have one question. We can take this outside if you'd like to get to that same point.
I love your,
you know I mean?
I love yeah. your working voice.
Thank you.
Yes. So it's really important to have those facilities, and those things are great, but there are certain spaces in which they just don't work. At some point, you have to decide, especially, we're all very fortunate. We're working artists of color. We're doing it on Broadway. We've had those experiences. We've built those connections. So as you have those resumes that support your truth, when you say, oh, no, I'm not doing that, now there's some power behind it. And now you make space for the people who come behind you, because if I can step into a room and say, hey, it's unacceptable that we didn't get paid for this, or we're here too long, or our break time is now, or those kinds of things. What then happens is the artists behind you, those other members of your ensemble, maybe the other black people in yeah. your companies who have never seen that before, go, oh, wait, I don't have to accept this kind of treatment, or it's totally acceptable for me to say that I need this thing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that does mean that you might not get the job. I've had many conversations with black people, particularly black women, who say, you know, my version of this character was this. And I didn't want to do this thing where this role was not going to be a black woman. It was going to be a woman who with darker skin. Because a lot of times, especially in this age where people are starting to recognize that diversity might be profitable, they're what their choices are sometimes are not just, I want a black person with all the fullness of what that experience yeah. might mean and what that might do for the context of this piece. What they want is a dark-skinned white person or, you know, a ethnic, like a safe person or something else. And so often people will say, let's keep the conversation of diversity or inclusion away from our piece and put a black girl there. Or let's do it, and we want some different conversations around masculinity. Let's put an Asian man, or ooh, let's get a Latin girl, and maybe something will be different.
Right.
And it becomes this tokenism conversation.
I want to, now that I have everybody here, I want to ask a question. Because I want to know. Okay, so I don't believe I'm defined by, A, my sexuality or my race. But I'm being now seen in the rooms for Fiero. I'm being seen for Christians. I'm being callbacks, yeah.
Okay.
I'm being seen for the Tootsies. I want to know what you think about. Are we getting? Would I get it because I'm best for the role, or because I'm filling a quota, or because I'm? Do you know what I'm saying?
Taylor,
yeah. I have had the pleasure and a blessing to have done a lot of original work this last year. I got to do.
You're good at doing it.
No clap for yourself, girl. You deserve it. You're popping.
Thank you. But I do want to piggyback on, like, actually all of this. I was thinking about it earlier, where, like, when I specifically create a role, I do need to create it as a Black woman. Like, even if that's not what the play's about, that's what my experience and what my experience is going to bring to the role. And so it's important for it to be seen and for it to be heard. And however I interpret that. So that includes my strength, that includes our depth, you know, things that we've had to go through to get where we are. And to answer that question and all of this, because every time you are, like, in the same way, I did Despero earlier last year, and I got to play a princess. And yes, I was the only Black person in the whole thing, but I was a Black princess. And from here on out, that role will always be known as the Black princess. And there's nothing about her race, but there is a line in the show that says she looked just like the princess in the book. And that was so important to me, because when people read, you don't, like, if you were to imagine the pretty princess in a fairy tale, like, unfortunately, the Black girl is not the first thing that comes to mind. But now every little Black girl who sees that show, if they continue to cast in this way, which I know they did when they went to Berkeley, I know they'll hear that line and hear themselves being represented. Yeah. And my thing is, whether you tokened me or whether it wasn't a conscious decision, I am the best, I know I'm the best, and I will make it the best. Mm-hmm. And I'll show you that it is profitable, and right. Not because I'm a token, but because we're
talented
yeah. And worth it. And right. You made the right decision by right. Casting me. Yeah.
And that's yeah. And what is important in that is that even if it is a quota, it becomes our responsibility to, when we step into it, to make it known that I am going to bring the fullness of myself. Now, whether you decide that that's not what you want anymore, you have to live with that. But I am going to fully bring in, use this platform and the privilege to be in this moment and bring all this Blackness into it.
And I love these answers, because I feel like when we have these conversations, we need to explore both spectrums, and it's about the work. Mm-hmm. It's about the work that comes down to it. And Aisha, do you want to add on?
Sure. So,
look, I'm just taking over.
Anybody need some water? It is about the work. And yes, so I've had many people, they love to say that Anna can't be Black, and I'm like, well, here I am.
You are tremendously.
Yeah, it's like, oh, Anna can't be Black, but Elsa can shoot ice out of her hands and Olaf can talk. Okay, cool. So it's just like, you can extend, you can have this moment of imagination and you can, like, wrap your arms around that, but Anna doesn't look, and I'm like, I'm playing, and it's so funny because it's the thing of, like, when we were younger, you're growing up and you see all these different ethnicities and cultures being represented, and I think when we're young, we are open to it. We're like, oh, okay, it's the adults that teach us not to be like that. And I had a friend to come and see me as Anna, and he was in the audience listening to the reactions, and he said there was a father and a son, and they were both white, and the father was like, so how'd you like Olaf? Okay. And he's like, oh my God, I love Olaf. And the father was like, how'd you like Elsa? And he's like, oh my God, I love Elsa. And then the father was about to make a, like, and, you know, Anna, and the little boy, before he could even say anything, was like, oh my God, I love Anna, she's amazing, da, 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 da. And it's like, it doesn't matter. And I walk out to the stage door and I see a blonde hair, blue eyed white girl. I walk out, she's like, Anna. Like, you're singing the songs that they know that are the character. You're acting it out, you're funny, you're singing it, you're doing it. And so they're like, oh, this is the character. It doesn't matter in that moment what your skin tone is, or what your race is, or your ethnicity is. It's this is a human being, and I'm playing it, but I just so happen to be a black woman. Like, let's not forget it. But it's not the reason why I should or should not get the role. Yeah. And I also hate the term colorblind casting. Yeah. I hate it.
You gonna see me.
Because, okay. Yes! I don't like it. And a term that people have put out there, you know, in response to that is color conscious casting, which I'm like, okay, cool, I'll take it. How about casting?
It's just casting.
It's just casting. But my thing about colorblind specifically is I don't want you to be blind to my color. Yeah. I don't want you to make my race be something that stops you from considering me for the role, but I also don't want you to ignore that I am a black woman.
Colorblind casting is basically a friendly way of saying it's for black people. Like, it's not for, you know, like, you're not saying we're going to do colorblind casting when you're looking to hire a white woman for a role. Like, you're not doing colorblind casting for Sarah and Ragtime. Like, it colorblind casting only affects people of color, you know? And so that's problematic, you know?
Why, we can't say gypsy anymore, right? So why are we saying that?
Yeah, and I think
it's a little different. But
why?
But
gypsy is a derogatory term towards.
See, I'm blind to these things. I think gypsies are people who move from city to city.
No, it's actually it's
ethnic
like
group.
Saying the N word.
It has its own slur about certain people and spaces.
Yeah. Yeah.
Legacy robe.
Yes, legacy robe.
And there are ways in which we're growing, and those are parts of those conversations about how theater has to catch up to the ways it's participated
yes.
in those same difficulties and oppressions, and how we Agreed. As theater people have also co-opted those same conversations. So there's always space to learn and grow, and the theater has adjusted, and now it's legacy robe time.
Right.
I just recently read an article about, Encores is doing... Thoroughly Modern Millie coming up, and they just got a new artistic director, and she is also directing that show. And she is talking about, you know, Encores does dated material, and how do we do shows in this time, period, and not offend the entire audience? And so, like, for example, you know, Millie has a lot of problematic situations with the Asian community, and so they have brought in Lauren Yee, who's written in a million plays in the last few years, but she's an Asian playwright, to come in and help redo the script. And I know they've renamed some of the characters. Ashley Park is going to play the lead. Where is it? Oh, and the director was saying that, like, they are going to address the problems in the script and make sure that they're respecting, you know, the audience of today, and also the script itself. And it's our duty to update these things if we want to, you know, do these shows that we love and are in the canon. But why not update them? Like, that's the respect the show deserves as well, you know?
And I think that's beautiful that they're, you know, creating more opportunity and opening up the conversation for that. And I think we also have to push, like, just having new shows and shows that are written by that playwright. Let's do one of her plays. Let's do, like, you know, more inclusive and more diverse shows. And when you have creative teams and you have casting directors, that's another part, I feel, of the diversity, not just behind stage, but also in, like, our casting and in our writers and in our directors and musical directors and just all of these different areas. They are all parts, and producers, they are all a part of choosing what stories we're telling. Mm-hmm. And so we're continuing to tell these stories. I love a revival, but, like, we have so much new stuff out there, and we have so many new artists that are waiting for their chance. And so let's do an encore where you give, like, new playwrights a chance, or new musical, you know, composers and lyricists and book writers a chance to, like, put their stuff out there. Like, let's create stuff like that, you know?
So how would you guys define diversity in musical theater? Like, I feel like we say diversity as a buzzword all the time now, but how would you actually define diversity in musical theater? You don't have to. Like, you don't have to go first.
Seeing everybody for everything, you know?
See everyone for everything.
Yeah. I'd like to see shapes as well as shades.
And we were talking about disability
shapes
and abilities.
Shapes and shades.
Yeah, I don't think it's... I think diversity, we've coined that to be about black and white, but it's also about like our Latinx friends and our Asian people and our LGBTQ community and our disabled community
and
different shapes. And like it's not just limited to race. I think it's about everything. And just the same thing of like once we have diversity behind the scenes and in our producers and everything else that are making these decisions about what's being told, then I think we'll start to see more productions that are more inclusive and more diverse and that look like the world that we live in.
But I would say pertaining to blackness, like diversity in musical theater to me is also about the rich complexities of the diaspora of black folk. So diversity in musical theater is hearing my black folks that come from immigrant parents' story. It's hearing Southern black folk story, which is very different than Northeastern black folk story, which is very different than Midwest. It's like, that's the diversity that I want to see too, is the complexities that we find. All have very different experiences of blackness. Mm-hmm. And I want to see that on stage.
Seeing people of diversity leading the shows, you know, and also like being a part of moving the plot along and giving them a voice, and we're not just coined as the like sassy best friend or the support, you know, but like let us lead, you know.
I think that's something that's really interesting to me in particular, because a lot of the early professional success I've had has been in ensemble work. I love ensemble work. I think it's very important. You have a different experience of the show. When you live inside it, you have your couple of lines, and you get to do the kiki and the social space and all those things. When you are leading a show, there's a different set of work. There are different values. There are different things you have to do. You're busy with press. You have more lines to learn. And there's a different kind of collaborative spirit that you often get to have in terms of proximity and closeness to a director. So some of the privileges we're talking about of taking up space and being able to serve the work and bringing yourself are largely things that are afforded to folks in principal contracts or folks who are leading projects. And so I think one important thing is to know the context in which you're bringing yourself to the space. Because if you have one line in the piece and your line has to be the punchline that serves the thing, that serves the, the white guy whose journey we're really on, then, you know, you are going to have a really different way of interacting with that work. And so a moment that I'm in now that I'm very grateful for is I finally get to lead a show. So this We're Gonna Die at Second Stage, I'm working, my face is on a poster. That's different, you know? And so I'm like, oh, what does that mean? Thanks, y'all. But even that, there's something really powerful about being in that rehearsal space. Our director, Raja Feather Kelly, director and choreographer, is black. Mm-hmm. Young Jean Lee, our playwright, is an Asian woman, and also the original performer of the piece when they did it years ago. But most of the people who are in our room are stage managers, are music, you know, associate music copyists, other actors and performers in the show. It's one of the most diverse rooms I've ever been in. The other day we looked around and I was like, I've never worked with 5 Asian women at the same time. This is a moment. And y'all have like power levels, titles, you know. Our director is black, so is our assistant, and so is our assistant. Like, I was like, wow. And that's really different. But also, there are tons of white folks in the room. There are tons of queer folks in the room. There are folks from all different levels. People who have kids. People who just got out of school. It's so cool. And in a way, Bronxville was that same environment. We had kids. We had grown adults. We had people who were making their Broadway debut at 50. And we had people who were making their Broadway debut fresh out of Elon. And so there's just a lot of value when you get to go to work and the work and the work environment looks like the world around you. And you can feel safe because we can do family. And I know that I'm going to be looked in the eye and have this experience. And then that empowers you. So when a director says, oh, what do you think about this moment? Or how would you bring yourself to this? Then I can make those choices. And when you have that freedom for a playwright, you know, Young Jin Lee is like, I want this to feel like you. So how would you say this? And I'm like, bet. And then she was like, I love it. Put it in the script. And I was like, wow. Yeah, right. So there are a lot of really cool moments of those, that kind of privilege.
Yeah, I think what it boils down to is respect. You want to feel respected. You want to feel heard. And luckily, now I'm at a point where I am leading a show. Yeah. And, well, again, no. But Don't take my mic, but I lead it with four other men that are powerhouses that have that give me respect that I give back to them, and it's this volley of power and learning and play, and we get to put on a play, a black play, that is changing the lens of theater, I think, because now people get to see us for A, what the temps brought to the world, but also what black artistry can do for the world, and But it, what comes with that is respect of that craft for me now, because I know that it's a gift, and I know that it's about the respect that I have to give to the show as well, and to everyone that comes to see it, and everybody that has a hand in it. So with great power comes great privilege. You know what I mean? So you have to take care of the gifts as well, because as quickly as you have it, it could be gone. Right. You know. So I want to do my best to be a positive impact on the future now. So I think that is also what we need to remember, too, is to what you be kind to everyone, and to what you get out is what you put in.
Be the change you wish to see.
Come on, Gandhi. Come on. That's why you mom.
So with that, because sometimes we get so obsessed with work and we're, like, driven by our jobs, what are the things, and this basically I just want you to talk about Bold or, like, maybe mentor projects or albums we've got going on. What's the work you guys do outside of Broadway that sustains you as well?
You guys can follow me at Ishalani Remy at Instagram. to keep up to me.
Take his mic.
Take my mic. No, but I do just, I'll talk first and then the ladies will go. But I do, you ain't even supposed to be here.
I was invited by Felicia.
We're on the poster.
But I do have half hour at 12:30, so let me go first.
Well, should I go first?
Just keep going.
Oh, I do a lot of teaching. I teach a lot. I do. I like teaching. I love education. I love showing a little kid what they can do, or breaking down a boundary with them through theater, or shaking them up, or when they say I can't, let them know that they can. And especially, I love going to inner city schools or underprivileged, but giving them a face of privilege, not a privilege, but of hope of what you can do. Because I came from a small town, and now my mug is all over the place. And just to show them that if they apply themselves, and if all it takes is one person to say yes, and blessings can happen. And if you keep your faith, and if you keep your feet on the ground, it's my mission to do that. I think it's my responsibility. So that's a lot of what I do. And everybody's 54 below.
I love that. Aisha, take it away.
I'm about to dip, but
okay.
Because our half hour is at 12:30.
Okay.
Early matinee.
It is. I feel so full.
But I think, in the same vein, a prayer of mine has always been to utilize my gifts that I feel like God has given me to, like, be a light and to inspire or minister and empower others. And real quick, like in like he's saying, you get this opportunity, but it's not always going to be there. So, like, use it as best as you can. And so in Frozen, I had a fan of mine who made this little doll, and it looked like me. And it made me feel, like, very, like, I don't know. It just made me feel great. It made me feel seen. And so I would see these little chocolate drops at the stage door after I went on, and I was like, I want to give them a piece of that to take home, you know? And my mother was very big on, like, making sure I was seen and represented in my dolls and my toys and my books and stuff, to be like, you know, your hair is beautiful, your skin tone is beautiful. Like, these are unique parts about you that I don't know if you might see them outside of the world, but you're going to see them in this house, and you know walking out into the world that you are beautiful. And so I commissioned the fan to make these little dolls, and, like, during Black History Month, whenever I would see this a little chocolate drop, I would just give them this doll to take home with them, so that you take that home with you and you see yourself and you take a piece of that and you're like, look at that and know that your options and your possibilities are limitless. And I've had young women across the country, like, send me messages about different things that they're dealing with in their schools of not being given parts because of their skin color or getting backlash and things like that. And so in the same vein, I've received some of that. And so I like to turn it around and be like, look, sis, it's not about that. You got it. You have been verified. You have the talent, and you've been given this opportunity for a reason. So walk in that. Their minds are too small to wrap around that, but that doesn't mean that you are not worthy of what you're doing. And I just to go further, I desire to start a mentorship program for young men and women of color, just to see themselves. I want to start it off in the performing arts program industry, but like to see themselves in these different roles and in these different departments within our industry succeeding, and so that they know they have someone they can reach out to and know that these careers are a possibility. And I wanted to expand to like more different careers. I have people of color and succeeding in so many different veins. But I think when you're young, you need to see your face or someone that looks like you or speaks like you or is where you're from succeeding in these different areas to even think that it's possible and know that it's an option. And so for that, I want this mentorship program to like let them know your options are limitless and you have so much to choose from. Yeah. So.
Good message. Good word.
I love that. It's like our... Go to work, yeah.
Oh, we love you, Aisha Jackson. Bye. Thanks for stopping by. Yes. Yeah.
I love what Aisha said, because it's like our pain points can become peepholes for possibilities.
Hey.
And like,
that'll make it run.
And on that note, I remember one of my first auditions in the city leaving and feeling like crap. And what I realized in that moment was the intersectionality of being an artist who faces rejection every day and being a black woman, being black and being a woman, and facing living in a culture, in a society that rejects me every day could be a big problem if I don't address it. And so I had a mentor that helped me start, you know, figuring out what that meant to me. And I was like, I want to start an organization because I have received so much help to help me navigate through that. And I want other women.
Ooh.
I want to help other women navigate through that. And so Bold was formed. And we believe black women will change the world. It's the year of the black woman, by the way. We build up black women for the restoration of culture by doing two things. Cultivating wholehearted for one another community, creating communities where we see each other and we're for each other, where we celebrate and grieve with one another, and then contributing creatively to the telling of our stories. So how are we writing our own stories and creating them in spaces where they are safe and where they can exceed? For colored girls, just on a side note, for colored girls, Nsizaki Shange was like, we were doing For Colored Girls downtown, and we were fine. They came to us and wanted us to come to Broadway. Mm-hmm. And that speaks of that piece because it lived and had a life that was authentic because it was created in a safe space. And so we do crazy cool things. Right now we have a series with MCC around C.A. Johnson's all the Natalie Portmans, where we're doing writing workshops and doing exercises to help women get those creative juices flowing. And we do mixers and just get to know each other. So if you're a black woman in the performing arts or know someone here in the city, go to boldnyc.org. Yeah.
Janelle or Taylor, do you have anything you want to add? Tell us about your music.
I will do that. So a little background. I'm from New York City, born and raised, and I went to the University of Pennsylvania, but my degree is in Africana Studies with a minor in music. And so I did not originally plan to come into theater. It happened to me. It's a longer story. But all that to say is that I'm a person who has always had to be full by doing other things. Musical theater is amazing. I love it. I love plays. I love TV. I love voiceover, all that stuff. But there's a life that you can live outside of just your job. I know, wild, yeah. Wild. But, so when I'm not doing that, I often am creative, and I have been working on a lot of original music. I've been releasing a lot of original music. Last year, I put my first single out. It's called Winning. Yes. You can find it wherever you get your music. I'm singing, I'm rapping, I'm giving original moments. And it's really cool to do that. So I'm very, very grateful for that opportunity. Other than that, I really am into astrology these days. I've been reading lots of books.
Do you have the CoStar
myself.
App?
I do have CoStar.
Let's all meet after, yes.
CoStar is like the beginning of the journey. I mean, I'm pretty deep in it, y'all.
I see.
We're looking at different house systems. I have many other texts. There are many podcasts I'm into. I can look at a chart and know some things. You know, don't tell me your birth time. Like, we might have some things. If you're cute, please tell me your birth time. I just want to... I want to know. I want to know.
What about you, Taylor?
I'm single. I don't know.
Hey.
No, I guess, to be honest, I'm kind of trying to figure that out now. Like, I've been in New York 3 years now, which really isn't that long. And I feel like, luckily, and I've been able to do a lot of work. And so my struggle has been when I'm not working, I get very depressed really fast. And I always think it's going to get easier, but it turns out my fuse gets shorter and shorter. And so I'm trying to discover that now. I play guitar. I'm trying to write music. I sing a lot. I like love to sing, and I'm realizing that how much I legit just love singing. So I try to sing as much as I can.
Yeah.
And I like to teach. When I go home, I try to do master classes. But I'm trying to figure out how to do some more here. So we're gonna need to talk, and I'm gonna try to look up this. But not try to. I'm gonna. Join Bold.
Yes.
I'm looking for those spaces and opportunities right now.
Yeah.
Because baby New York, yeah.
Thank you for being honest about that. I appreciate that. I want to leave time for some audience questions, but we have to, before we get there, I'm so sorry. We have to do the lightning round of, like, the two final questions of the podcast, which are if you could recommend a piece of Black art, whether that's a film, a book, a musical album, something like that, what would it, for everyone to take in, what would it be?
Question.
Destiny, we're starting with you, girl.
That's so hard, but
I know.
I was just talking about it, and so it's going to be Letters to a Young Artist by Anna Deavere Smith, ADS. If you have not read that book, read it. It will change your life. This book will change your life.
Yes. Hi, Janelle. You got this.
That's like picking a baby.
I know. The next one's harder. The next one's harder.
Pick it. Lightning. Come on.
The first thing in my head, because you said Anna, and I'm just thinking about One Woman Show stuff. I saw, oh my goodness, what is the name of this actor? The gentleman who did Fires in the Mirror at Signature
Michael
Theater.
Michael Benjamin Washington.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep.
The idea of, so I'm just going to recommend him as an artist.
Yes.
Because Sir stepped into this role that had been written and originated by Anna Deavere Smith and slayed it. He was giving me, I'm a Jewish woman, I'm a Guyanese dad, I'm a child, I'm a mom.
Yes.
And was so transformative in this role that as I think about the sort of One Woman Show space, I was like, oh, this is everything I need to know. So
he was great. He's a podcast alum, in fact. I'll name drop that, yeah. All right, Jelani, you got this.
Ain't you proud of the Life and Times of the Temptations at the
playing
Imperial
at the
Theater?
Imperial
on
Theater.
Simple plug. Come see it.
Honestly, that show touches on a lot of things, but I would also recommend Slave Play. I think that that's also wonderful. But I think that you see all these people up here that are all so different, that know how to love themselves, but also love other people. So I think absorb the fellow people that are here in front of you. I think that's the best
Thank
way
you.
To thrive.
Yes.
I'm leaving here feeling inspired and full and informed, but also optimistic because I see like the future and it's so bright.
I love that. So you recommend y'all.
And it's female. What? Yes. I'm here. I'm with them.
I'd recommend The Astronomy Club on Netflix. It's so funny, and I think it actually is a very good example of Black diversity. And it's sketch comedy, and it's a Black sketch comedy show, which we haven't seen really since In Living Color. But also they touch on their different types of Blackness and how they've all different, you know, are living in this world differently because of where they come from and who they are. And it's just really fun and really funny. And, like, on the same note, Black Lady Sketch Show. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, final question is harder, and I'm sorry, but if you could give a shout-out to a fellow Black artist, this is not exclusionary. This is just giving some love, a shout-out, someone that's on your mind that you want to amplify. We'll start with Taylor.
My shout-out, I prepared, so I was ready. My shout-out goes to Peppermint, the drag queen, and also just the beautiful trans artist, but she is helping organize and produce a Nubia tour, which is a handful of the Black drag queens from Drag Race, and they're doing a tour, and they have New York dates March 5th and 6th, which is my birthday, and I already have a ticket. But it's literally just to celebrate those queens, and they're putting it out now because for Black History Month. But look, they look stunning. Their looks are right, and I just cannot wait to see what that show is. It's her, Bibi Sahara, Vixen, Moni Carr, if you're a Drag Race fan.
What's the question?
Fellow Black artist shout out.
The Jelani. Obamas.
Yes. Honestly, always and forever.
Honestly, Dominic Marceau, Sergio Trujillo, Ben Vereen, obviously, is the reason why I started this.
Yes.
Is that
That's good. Obama. Shout out to the Obamas.
Cicely Tyson.
Yes.
This is hard.
It is so hard.
I know, but it's fun for me to hear what you guys talk.
No, honestly, I could. This is a show plug, but here we go. Otis Williams.
Yeah.
Who's Last Living Temptation, because he, sitting down with this man and to hear what they actually went through and the knowledge and the actual passion that he still has for performing in general. The man's 70-something years old and is still kicking, but has paved the way for us to not only tell his story, but to tell it honestly. And it's literally like I have another grandpa, because I feel like we talk about feeling safe and respected. I respect this man so much, and he respects me, and it's a wonderful, wonderful gift to be able to tell his story.
Wow. Yes.
Okay, so an artist I know personally that I would shout out is Bradley Gibson, who's currently Simba on Broadway.
Right.
And he's releasing his own music and being sickening, and that's my brother from A Bronx Tale, so that's someone who is in the community and also doing this work of doing their work on Broadway, but also finding other ways to be whole artists. And the second person, who I don't know personally, but dreams, is Melina Matsoukas, who directed Queen and Slim, the film that just came out. She was not acknowledged by the Academy for an Oscar nomination, but she should have been, because that, as a directing first film, was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And so just shouting out a black woman who already has a Grammy and is sickening and doesn't need you, but you should have tried it.
Yes.
This is really hard. I'm going to shout out someone in my show, Myra Lucretia Taylor, who plays Graham. I just am obsessed with women who have been in this business and have a steady and progressive career. You could scroll through her IMDb Pro for years. Mm-hmm. And just consistent and trusted. And then should I do someone who I don't know personally?
Yes, do it.
Okay, maybe I shouldn't, because I didn't really think about it.
you know what I mean?
No, those are beautiful answers, and thank you.
Also,
for
Mila Jam. I don't know if you guys know Mila Jam, but she is a powerhouse in this community, and she's a friend of mine. Just to see, you got to celebrate people that put themselves out there on platforms that take risks. And that are wanting change and positivity and inclusivity, and I celebrate that.
Yeah. Yes, you have one more.
Sorry, I do know this person, but I just want to shout her out. Camila Forbes, who is a director and the executive producer at the Apollo,
and a Jamaican. Boop 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 boop.
I just am in awe of her multi-hyphenatedness.
Yes,
and that's also something I admire. People who are crazy multi-hyphenated and are about to really F the game up.
All right. I lied. We have no time for audience questions now. But this was such a good conversation.
I'm so sorry.
We're going to continue the party right outside those doors. And if you don't get any of these people, please tell them where they can follow you on social media. We already know Jelani's, but...
Taylor Iman Jones and all the things.
Mm-hmm. It's Jelani Remy.
It's Jelani Remy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Janelle McDermott with no vowels. So that's J-A-N-E-L-L-E. MCDRMTH. Follow me on Instagram.
And I'm at Destiny Ray. That's Destiny with two E's, no Y, and Ray, R-E-A.
Y'all, thank you so much for being here. Thank y'all for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Another live show in the books, y'all. Thank you.
Yes! And shout out to Felicia, who cultivated
Felicia Fitzpatrick, y'all.
Queen.